Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode with me, Mackenzie Tiggs. I bring on individuals and we really just dive into where they've been, where they're at, and where they're going. I have a special guest with us today, Tommy. He is actually, you know, somebody that another friend has introduced me to in wanting to share his story on the podcast. And I invite any of you that know anybody that want to come onto the podcast, reach out to me. There's all the resources that you can in the show notes to be able to get a hold of me and be able to share your story. So today I have Tommy with Idaho Cigar Cartel.
That is correct.
How incredible.
The cartel here in Idaho is primary function is informing the cigar enthusiast of political actions and stuff like that. We have our landing page, which pretty well spells out what we are. But our main informational page is our Facebook page, Idaho Cigar Cartel.
Okay. So tell us about your journey in life, because you've got a lot of lessons.
Before we get to that, let's, you know, a lot of people are thinking, why would you want to call yourself a cartel with the political backlash that they have with the word cartel? And what I would like to explain is that historically, a cartel is a coalition or cooperative arrangement between political parties intended to promote a mutual interest. And our mutual interest is that beautiful tobacco leaf cigar.
How interesting.
And you were asking earlier about what got me into it. I didn't start smoking until 2019. It was my last day that I worked for the railroad. I was at the time, a locomotive engineer. I hired out in 1972 as a trainman. Got my conductor certificate in 75, went into as a fireman in 84, got my engineer certificate in 86, and in 2019, I pulled the pins after 47 years, 4 months, and 8 days, but I wasn't counting or anything when I left. But for about 7 or 8 years, I went to a local establishment out in Loomis, California, in the neighborhood where I used to live, called Tobacco Republic. Wonderful humidor. Great people. But what was funny was I never smoked a cigar. I would buy cigars for friends that I had that lived 289 miles north that could not get decent cigars. They would say, Tommy, you know, when you're in town, can you try to find me this or that or whatever? And I would find it for them, buy it for them. And then I just pop my bottom on the couch and start talking to the guys like we're long lost friends.
That's cool.
And, I always told myself that the very last time I work on the railroad, I'm going to start enjoying it for me. So I brought a train down from Dunsmere, California, put my train away in Roseville, got off the locomotive engine, did my paper tie up on the computer, got in my car, went over to the local humidor and talked to my friend Greg Perry, who was the tobacconist there at Tobacco Republic, and said, I'm ready. And my very first cigar was a terroir from Chinook Cellar that used to be manufactured. Well, I'm not sure where they're manufactured at, but their outlet and main distribution center was in Santa Rosa. But the winery that they were working out of burnt down during the Santa Rosa fire.
Oh, wow.
So now they're down in Texas, and I haven't been able to find them, but I'm hoping they come back.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about what it was to be like a train conductor. Like, what is that even? That whole history there. I know we'll get into more of the cigars, but yeah. I also want to learn more about like who you were, you know, as your career, because that is something that, you know, I think is lost a lot.
Oh, it is. I mean, unfortunately, the job today is not what it was when I first hired out. I mean, back then, you had the conductor, you had an engineer, sometimes you would have a fireman. The conductor would have two trainmen, and we just, you know, when I hired up, it was what they called the 16-hour law. They can work us 16 hours before we called it quits, no matter whether they sent us to bed or not, but the longest we could work was 16 hours. Now it's a 12-hour law by federal, and at 12 hours, you could, you know, be out there for 30 hours, but you can only physically work for 12. And I have had a friend who, during the latest storms in California, because a tree falling over the tracks, was stuck on his train for 36 hours.
Whoa.
And they left Roseville, got up in the mountains, hit a couple of trees, came to a screech and halt. Of course, they did not have the equipment big enough to move the trees, and it was snowing so hard that it took them another, close to 20-something hours to catch it, get up there.
Wow.
To get them out.
And that's something that, I mean, we don't hear about.
No.
You know, in this day and age of how that even happens, you know, it doesn't even cross my mind of, like, making sure that the railroad tracks are clear.
Well, that's true. And I was very active with Operation Lifesaver. I was, when I was in my younger days, when I was a fireman, I asked the company if I could be a promoter for Operation Lifesaver. And I got the opportunity in California to basically, from Elk Grove all the way to Fresno, including the west side, down the I-5 corridor and down through the heart of the San Joaquin, go to every high school and talk to their driver's ed classes about railroad safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a reality. If you're on the track and you don't move off the track, I mean, we can see it a mile away. It's already over and done with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of people have gone on YouTube and they've seen some spectacular accidents. Those are not staged. Those are real.
Right.
And I'm sure that the question is going to pop up. Have I ever killed anybody? The answer is yes. More than I ever want to count.
Whoa.
And yet it does haunt me all the time.
But, wow.
You know, it's just part of the job. There's nothing we can do about it. If I'm in a position where I know I'm going to hit a car, I'm hoping nobody's in there. You know, they're smart enough to get out, get away. You know, like they made a turn too sharp and got the front wheel hung up over the rail and they couldn't get the car off. They get out of the car. Cars are replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
People's lives are not.
Right.
But if I see it going to happen, it's already done in my mind. I mean, once I put that train in an emergency, I'm just along for the ride.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just hoping I can keep everything together.
I wasn't even going to ask you that question, actually. I'm glad you are so vulnerable in telling that, because especially working as a first responder, I've responded to people that, you know, their car has gotten hit by a train. I know that, you know, my mom working in dispatch, I know those calls have happened.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time. I also know, you know, especially on this podcast, we do talk a lot about mental health. And that is, I mean, when people think, right, of a plan that's quick, easy, but they don't ever think about
who it affects.
Who it affects.
That's true.
And you are the very first person that it affects.
Yes.
How did you even deal with that? Like your first time?
Fortunately, I hired out with Southern Pacific. And of course, it was absorbed by Union Pacific. But back in the early days when we, you know, when I was working the commute trains over between San Jose and San Francisco, we were having one or two fatalities a week.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's just the way it is. I mean, the population is so compact and people with problems and I have no answers for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is that I do know that as a trainman, I was a guy that had to get off the train. And of course, the engine's a mile past the incident. And I got to walk all the way back and wait for the first responders. And is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's troublesome because, you know, you also feel helpless. Like, you know, it's going to happen, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's very traumatic to see, you know, and deal with. But then you also have kind of that disassociation of, like, that was their life. You know, you couldn't have done, you literally cannot stop the train.
No, there's nothing we can do.
There's nothing you can do, you know. That's very heavy because...
It is very heavy.
You know, just
well, I was quite fortunate. I was quite... My father was a railroad man. He originally, in his younger days, after he got out of the Navy, worked for the Mopac Railroad in Missouri Pacific, back in Missouri, and then went to work for the Santa Fe down in Southern California, and then found out that they had, there were job openings up in Central California, and put in his application. And all I can ever remember is him working for the railroad. One of the funny stories I like to tell is I learned how to do math doing my father's time book, because I learned how much he was going to get paid.
Yeah.
Because you had different formulas you had to use, math, addition, subtraction, fractions, blocks of numbers. And I learned how to do that as a kid, which was kind of funny and interesting, because the teacher, well, how do you know this? How do you know that? And it's like, I do my dad's time book.
Yeah. That's super cool. How much, I mean, I think, you know, trains as transportation is so lost. You know, we have airplanes and we have cars. We have all of these other things. Like, what is something that most people don't know about the train system that you could teach them? How does that all
don't have enough
work?
Of
we don't have enough of them.
Not transportation-wise for public. I would love to see, and I've heard that they're looking at putting in a passenger service between Salt Lake City and Seattle, which will come through Nampa.
Okay.
And that's on the drawing board, but there's no telling what the government's going to do. They're doing a feasibility study now, and it'd be nice to do it. I mean, if you ever go to Europe and travel, I mean, my daughter, when she was a senior in high school, got the opportunity to go to Denmark and spend a year as a foreign exchange student. And main travel over there is either bus or rail. And if you wanted to go long distance in a hurry, you did it by rail.
Yeah.
And reliable times. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may have heard of stories of where in Japan, the bullet train, if it is more than 1 minute late, the conductor will apologize to all the passengers as they come off the train.
Whoa.
And it's just tradition because they take the schedule to heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just so much moving, you know, throughout that. And
now you have to remember, out here in the West, like in the San Joaquin Valley, they've got trains that will go 89 miles an hour. And I mean, that's pretty quick. On the East Coast, the Acela train can do over 100.
Wow.
And, more like 110, 120. And they're looking at putting in train service that, you know, they would love to see 150 or better.
Wow. Wow. What did you, like, I'm going to say haul on your train? Like,
everything.
Okay. You're like, it all.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that many years with it as well.
I came in a couple of years after livestock trains went out. But, I mean, the big joke was that, we do everything from pickles to parachutes. That's what you do. Most economical means of transportation is train transportation, because what you can put in a railroad car would take four or five trucks.
Oh, wow.
And, the disadvantage to that is that it has to go from a warehouse to a trailer to a train, or warehouse strict to the train. Then the train has to get put together and then go to point B, where it has to go back to another warehouse to be unloaded and then loaded back into another truck.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, of course, with the piggyback trains that you see all the time on the railroads, it's warehouse to trailer, trailer to train, to where you're going to go, delivered right to your door.
Mm-hmm.
And it saves a bunch of steps, but it's still the most economical means of transportation.
Wow. That's awesome. And then how did you, that's your life, that's kind of your livelihood. You went to the cigar lounges and you just enjoyed them.
Yes, I did. I did. I mean, the camaraderie with the guys and every one of them that I've ever gone to, I've never really worked. I wasn't seeing my friends because they were scattered all over the valley. My friends were, all over the place, and of course, different hours of the day that they're working. I got time off, but the friends that I made at the lounges were just spectacular. I mean, I know guys that worked in Hollywood. I know guys that are construction. I know guys that own their own, multi-million-dollar companies. Mm-hmm. And unless you know what they did, you know, when they sit there with a cigar, they're just another guy. Mm-hmm. And some of them are some people that I've made great friendships with.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the process of, cigars and tobacco. And, I have been able to experience the vault here in Meridian, walking in and just the ambiance and the feeling.
It's a camaraderie. Like, yeah. I said, the main glue, if you want to call it, is that tobacco leaf rolled into a cylinder that you purchase with hard-earned money and then you burn it. But the flavors are just, every cigar blend, every cigar line has their own unique take and taste. And many times throughout the month, I'll get on my tablet or my computer at home, and I'd be talking to friends throughout the United States, and we'll sit there and we'll video herf, is what it's known as, is herfing. But we will video herf cigar, and we'll talk about it. You know, and what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Do you think that, how could they have improved it?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I got a tickle in my throat.
You're good.
Thank you.
Yes. And I would say it's an acquired, taste. And
for almost 8 years, I went into Tobacco Republic. One of my best friends used to be the tobacconist before his brother took over. And for years, he would ask, who's this guy that's, he comes in and buys cigars, but never smokes and takes up one of my valuable seats. But, I'm going to get very personal about this. My wife passed away in February the 19th from ovarian cancer. 2 weeks prior to her passing, we found out that it was going to be terminal. And I just fell apart. My wife, who throughout us being up here in Idaho, when I would get on her nerves, she'd walk over to my cigar box and grab my car keys and throw them at me and say, go to the vault. I know where you're going. I'll see you later. Well, she basically did that at the hospital because she knew my daughter was coming in, and she told me, you don't need to be here. Go to the vault. Spend time with your friends. So I called my good friends over that were going to be there, told them what was going on. They made a call ahead of that down to the store and said, Tom's coming in. He's got bad news about his wife. We got to support him. They took some of the patrons that were there, moved them over to another section so we could take over a whole section as you first come in. They were waiting for me when I came through the door. Every one of them came over, gave me a big hug, sat me down. We started lighting cigars and talking, and after about 3 or 4 hours, I recharged my batteries, got in the car, went back to the hospital, and 2 weeks later, my wife was no longer with me. But that day was probably a day in my life that I was at my most vulnerable, but never felt so safe because of the camaraderie with my friends that I smoke cigars with.
Yeah. And they were there for you when you needed them the most.
All it takes is a phone call. All it takes is a phone call. And they're always calling me up saying, hey, how you doing? Everything going good? Anything we can do to help? And it's just, that's the it's known as the Brotherhood of Cigars.
Yeah.
Or the Brotherhood of the Leaf.
Yeah,
and of course, there's the sisterhood also, but it's all about that cigar.
Mm-hmm.
And people have their favorite, and some people swear by this and think the other one is, you could go out and smoke doggy either and taste better than that cigar. but everybody's tastes are completely different. I'm sure you've heard that from your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Is that everybody's taste is different.
Mm-hmm.
What I really like, my other friends may not. And there are some friends that I have turned onto a line of cigars that have not only turned into a passion, but an obsession, because the factory burnt down and they will no longer ever be made.
Wow.
So he's getting every single stick he can get his hands on.
Wow. Wow. I feel like nowadays, you know, the camaraderie within friends just isn't as solid as what I see and hear, you know, you talking about your friends. What kind of advice could you give the younger generations?
Well, when it comes to cigars, wait till you can legally do it. Like I said, I was 65 years old before I ever smoked my first cigar. Mm-hmm. I never smoked, I never chewed, had no interest. But having friends that did it, and I'll be honest, you know, for the 8 years I wasn't smoking, sitting there in that lounge, there are some cigars that just the after smoke is exquisite. But for the younger generation, people that can legally partake of smoking cigars, don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, the older generation is more than happy to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
And I think, you know, what you said was, I think, relevant in more, you know, terms than just tobacco. Like, you know, the older generation is there to want to teach the younger, but it has to be invited, and it has to be questions that we ask, and it has to be, you know, that knowledge that we partake in both sides of sharing that, saying, hey, let me learn from you. You know, you've gone through life. You've experienced these things. Like, what do you have to, you know, give to that younger generation? Because that's the only way we can learn, you know, is through these experiences.
Well, in some of the factories that the cigars are manufactured down in the Dominican Republic and in the Nicaragua, even in Miami, a lot of the older generation is there to teach them the trade. Mm-hmm. And there are some cigar lines that is the dream of the younger generation, being not just told how to do it, but influenced how, you know, this is how you want to blend this and that to get this type of a taste, because they've got the knowledge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it, you know, and years of experimenting with different types of leaves and, you know, at different levels. I wish I knew more. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning every single day, but I do understand that there's something that I've started to enjoy. And, you know, my personal collection is well over 500 or 600. I've got friends that have collections into the 3,000 and 4,000.
Wow. Teach us a little bit about the process, you know, because I know, like, the humidifier, and there's just so much to know about.
Yeah,
you know?
The dartboard baseline that everybody goes pretty much by is 70% humidity and 70 degrees. That is, for the most part, where cigars do their best. I've got a humidor at home that I could look it up on my computer, because I've got a, you know, a little Wi-Fi thermometer inside of there, and I will be somewhere between 70 and 71 degrees and between 68 and 72. No matter what time of the day or night, my humidor is out in the garage. It could be 32 degrees outside. That humidor is still going to be 70 degrees.
Wow. And is that to keep the moisture within the leaves?
Yeah,
what is that?
Yeah, okay. There's a number of ways to introduce humidity into an area. The most popular is what's known as Bovita packs, or the water pearls, which I apologize for my scratchy throat, but the pearls, once they are immersed in water, and you don't want to use just regular tap water. You need to use distilled water, because you don't want any of the minerals and all the other junk that's going to be in there, because that will ruin it. But once the pearls have expanded for a period of time, it will let out the humidity to maintain the 70%. And if it gets higher than 70%, it will actually absorb it to hold so to keep the area 70%. I personally have what is known as an Oasis 3.0, which is a positive unit. I've got the beads that are held in a tray. Once a week, I pour water in to make sure it's at the proper level. But it monitors the humidity and automatically turns on and forces air throughout my humidifier. And my humidifier is about as big as your kitchen door. I mean, wow. Your kitchen refrigerator.
Okay.
Single door, six shelves, stuffed full of cigars. But, I mean, it's a passion that I've really enjoyed. And then what I've done, I've actually taken an old wine humidor. And the wine humidor is set up where normally it's like between 56 and 60 degrees for wine. Well, I've taken a reptile environment controller, which you can set whatever temperatures you want, and a Amazon $20 ceramic heater. Oh. It's in the bottom of my humidor, tied into the reptile controller, so that if it gets below 68 degrees, the heater turns on. If it gets above 72, the refrigeration unit from the refrigerator comes on, and my humidity standalone.
Wow.
And I've had that unit now for over a year, and I mean, it's rock solid.
Wow. And you just put that all together?
Yeah. But I had friends there, you know, when I first envisioned what I wanted to build, I'm on, you know, on the internet talking to friends throughout the United States, and we're all smoking cigars and saying, I'm looking at this, I'm looking at that, and this is the problem I'm finding. And one of my friends who raises snakes down in Florida said, well, why don't you do this, the reptile controller?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what do you mean? He says, well, I've got, you know, snakes and lizards and all kinds of stuff, and their environment has to be so precise, either temperature or cool, for them to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And we started chit-chatting about that, and I'm thinking, you know, that's true, because if it is at 70 degrees, nothing's on. If it gets below here, this turns on. If it gets above there, that turns on. But when it gets back to 70 degrees, nothing's on.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just people having different hobbies and stuff that you're able to incorporate into something that you have turned into a passion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, you know, just the amount of connections that you have all over the U.S., you know, not only friendships, but...
last year, I met three lovely young gentlemen who turned out to be Canadian Royal Mounted Police officers that were down from Canada for the Rocky Mountain Cigar Fest, and we keep in contact all the time.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, in August, I'm really looking forward to it because they're going to be down there.
Oh, how fun.
But I mean, you know, and in the future, I hope to be able to travel the world.
Yeah.
And we're going to see what, you know, what happens.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I've got manufacturers that are very close friends. And it's always, when you coming down? When are you going to come down to Costa Rica? When are you going to come down to Ecuador? When are you going to come down to Nicaragua? When you kind of come to Miami.
That is so cool. Have you always had that openness to just connecting with others like that?
I think I have. You know, I'm an open kind of person. You know, until you do something wrong, you're going to be my friend. But, it's just, the answer to that question is yes. I've always been very open. It's just, I like people.
Mm-hmm.
And then having a passion and an enjoyment that I enjoy and they enjoy and we can share. And I mean, you know, an example. There was a line of cigars that have been manufactured that are only available at 4 retail stores throughout the United States. Limited to 200 boxes. I've got friends that there's no way they're going to make it out here in Idaho, but they've got the cigars.
Wow. That's cool. That's super cool. It's cool to just to see your life and your history and be able to feel that passion, you know, behind connecting and, you know, having never met you. And yet we can talk about something that you're so very passionate about.
Oh, yeah.
And it really comes back to, you know, the people and And I wish there was more of that within our world.
What's kind of surprising, and we were talking about it the other night, we went to V-Cut one evening, and we're enjoying the ambiance on a Friday night. And when you looked around that night, the patronage was 50-50. There were 50% male, 50% female. And not only guys or girlfriends that were there with their boyfriends or husbands or whatever who were smoking cigars, mm-hmm. they were also enjoying cigars. Mm-hmm. I would say out of that 50%, a good 60 or 70% of them were actually enjoying cigars. Mm-hmm. And they like what they like. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super neat. What else do you want to be able to teach people about, you know, what you do, what you have going on, kind of your next, journey within your life?
Well, the next journey with Idaho Cigar Cartel is that what we support is our local brick and mortars, that the mom and pop stores throughout the Treasure Valley, throughout Idaho entirely. And then, like I said, we are hoping to, in the near future, get a podcast together called Traveling with Cigars. So when you're traveling, this place is you've heard about it. You know that they've got great cigars. You got a place. There's Casper Cigars in Casper, Wyoming, one of the most unique humidors I've ever seen. You can go in there during the day. The regular store is open, got a couple of chairs there, and then they've got a sliding wall. When the store is closed, there is a lounge area to the side that you can become a member. They vet you. They give you a key card. I mean, there's cameras all over the place. They know who's going in and out. You have your own humidor locker. But you can access that 24 hours a day because you have ranchers and cowboys and mm-hmm. well drillers and farmers and whoever else that don't have regular hours that want to just sit down and enjoy a good cigar. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's one of the most unique such places I've seen. And I'm truly, I've kind of become friends with them and talked to them quite a bit, and support them.
Yeah.
But the support of the brick and mortar stores throughout the Idaho area is what we're really trying to do. Some of the actions that our group has taken part in the past, 2 years, the FDA trying to ban cigars. And take action on premium cigars. We've got the word out of this is what they're trying to do. This is how you get a hold of them and tell them, get your hands off of there. You got no business getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I don't know if you've heard about it, but in Idaho, they just passed legislation where premium cigars are capped at 50 cents tax. Which is going to be, the states that have already done it throughout the United States have seen major tax increase of volume of money coming in because more cigars are being sold at a reasonable price instead of being outlandish thinking that they're going to get a lot of money now. They're going to get a lot, I'd rather have 10,000 nickels than a $10,000 bill one time
mm-hmm.
because those nickels are going to keep rolling in. Mm-hmm. Rolling in.
Right. How old are you? Can I ask that?
Yes, you can. In November, I will turn 70.
Okay. I ask that because it's so intriguing that one, a 70-year-old will come onto the podcast.
Why?
because it's, I think podcasting is still so new, but I think the second part of that is...
Well, it's kind of funny because I've built a number of computers growing up. My wife, when she was alive, she taught herself DOS. She was a family practitioner. Right out of college, got her associate's degree and went right up and getting her master's in the medical field. And she was... very well respected. I mean, I've actually been with my wife during a lunch break and seen doctors come in getting consultations of patients of what do you think? Wow. And, that's pretty awe-inspiring when your spouse is sitting there watching a doctor come in and say, what do you think about my patient? What would you do? How would you go about it? I want your opinion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but she was a smart woman. She understood, well, she spoke fluent Russian.
Wow.
But she taught herself DOS in the early days. Her first computer was a Commodore 64. I wish I had that computer.
The second part, I mean, I love it. I am no judgment to, you know, people in what their stories are and how they get it out there. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me of, you know, having people on. It's actually funny. Last Friday, you know, I was at a restaurant eating up at the bar by myself, and there happened to be actually two gentlemen that were in their 70s sitting on either side of me, and just having a conversation with them ended up being a lovely evening. We were just bullshitting, we were teasing each other and just bantering. Mm-hmm. And they had made that comment like, oh, you just don't see this very often.
No, you don't.
And I love that part of it. You know, I think that is part of a little bit of my old soul that comes out, where I just, there is no judgment. Like, you have a whole life. You have 70 years to show us and to learn from and to, you know, pick your brain about. The second part that I was going to say that I just absolutely love is that you also are wanting to start a podcast.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And I love that, because it's still such a very new aspect of podcasting, what that looks like and how you can do it. And you, you know, even at 70 years old, are like, I can do this.
Oh, yeah. There's, I mean, what better way to let people know what's out there in the world than show them what's out there in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, voice description, you know, that's what I love about video podcasting, is that not only can you share the intellect of what's going on, of what you're thinking, but show them the beauty and the grandeur of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it, for me, it's that mindset where it's like, you have got to continue to keep growing, and you've got to continue to keep, you know, having these passions and evolving. And you are that example of somebody that has been evolving and still wants to evolve.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's so many people, especially, you know, with my medical background, it's like, I'm too old for that, or I don't have time for that, or I don't, you know, whatever that excuse is. And you truly are like, well, why?
Make time.
Yeah.
Make time. And like I said, there were, you know, there were days that I would get in my wife's way and get on her nerves, and she would make time to kick me out of the house. Because she knew when I came back, because you know, I'd be a whole different person. I'd get my batteries all recharged and ready to rock.
Yeah. And that's amazing that you both knew that. You know, you found a healthy way.
April the 9th, we would have been married 40 years.
Wow.
And just, I was truly blessed. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. How I hooked that lady, I do not know, but I am so pleased. And I'll be sharing pictures with you after the podcast. But we just had a fabulous run.
Yeah.
And she let, you know, even when she was sick, the one thing that she truly instilled into me was, don't stop enjoying life. Mm-hmm. If you enjoy smoking cigars, go smoke a cigar. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just truly blessed. And then having the friends that I have developed through the lounges, and it doesn't get better than that. It's just plain don't get better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask, 40 years, you know, you say that you're blessed, but what was your key to your marriage?
I like to say we never went to bed mad. You know, we've always, you know, we had many a disagreement. We had many, you know, and I don't want to say knocked down, dragged out, but there was a lot of shouting going on. And soon, you know, there were a lot of times that I ate a whole bunch of humble pie, because after I stormed out of the house and went and sat by the pond and sat there for a few hours, and I'm thinking, gee, she's right, and not being afraid to admit it. It doesn't make you less of a man to say, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, you're more of a man saying, my dear, you're right. I didn't look at it that way. Let's work it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing too is that communication between.
Oh, communication is very important. You're absolutely correct on that one.
You know, just you being able to not only say like, you know, you're not weak when you say.
Well, you
those
have to remember, working for the railroad, the big joke with my wife throughout our 40 years was that she was a working, married, single mom. Because I was, you know, we'd get invited to barbecues or parties or whatever. Is Tommy coming? I don't know. I don't even know if he's going to be in town. If he is in town, he may be resting because he's scheduled to go out. Don't know. But, you know, after a while, people understood that, you know, my occupation was my job. And mm-hmm. I chose to be a railroader, and I loved it. I mean,
yeah,
there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't enjoy it because I was in a position with that business or that industry that I could take time off when I needed to. If my daughter had something going on that was important that I needed to be there, I'd call them up and say, not coming in, find somebody else. That's what the extra board's for. Take care of the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Family is, you know, and being there for your kids, you know,
oh,
and
yeah.
that support and, you know.
Well, the reason my wife and I moved up here is because my daughter and her husband and my grandkids moved up here.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. I mean, we're not going to talk about California. Because my wife and I, when she retired from medicine, we had already had a business that was established since 1994. And we were making a boatload of money. And literally overnight, because of COVID, we went bankrupt.
Whoa.
And we brought it up here and we started it back up again. It's on a little hiatus while we get things reorganized because, you know, the steam engine is no longer working
right.
because she's gone. But we're getting things lined up so we can get it back online so we can continue doing what we love to do.
Yeah. And what is that business?
We own Vintage Courage of the Treasure Valley. We do weddings and special events with the horse-drawn conveyances.
Okay.
And we can be found on the internet at vintagecourage.com.
Perfect. Maybe this will help you get your, you know, your business.
Well, no, we've been getting phone calls. We've got some real nice carriages, but we've lost a couple of horses, and then of course now I've lost my wife, and you know, so we've got to restructure things and get some things replaced to get going again. But we don't plan on leaving. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. Do you ever play Santa?
I am a member of the Real Bearded Santa Association, and yes, I do. Matter of fact, and then of course, I've got the old church warden pipe. Every year, there's at least one or two events where I go dressed as Santa. I do play Santa, but my pipe's going with me, and it's going to be lit because the people I'm partying with are smoking their cigars or they're smoking their pipes, and we're going to have a great tight Christmas party.
Oh, how fun!
But yes, I am. So I'm a member of the Idaho Real Bearded Santa Association, and
so
love it.
So I can't wait to be at the vault and you're dressed in Santa smoking your cigar.
Oh, yeah. I show up there every year, at least once. Definitely.
How incredible. I'm glad I asked that for sure. You just got to ask the questions.
Oh, yeah. All you got to do is ask.
All you got to do is ask, and sometimes you'll be surprised at what they say.
True, true, true.
Yes. All right, Tommy, what more advice could you give our listeners today?
Enjoy life. I've learned to do it. I mean, it's a shame that my wife's passed away now, but kind of her mantra when she was, you know, in the last couple of weeks was, we'll be okay, but don't stop enjoying what you enjoy. Mm-hmm. Live your life.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I was very fortunate enough because she had her friends. I've got my friends. Sometimes we're all the same friends. Other times, sometimes she didn't like my friends, but she respected that they were my friends, and I respected that they were her friends. But it's just, you know, like you said, communication, trusting your spouse, and enjoying life completely. I mean, it's just a real kick.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. There's a lot of downfalls and there's a lot of struggles, but you can find those tiny little nuggets.
Oh, yeah. And I've got a whole bag full. 40 years worth.
That's amazing.
A lot of memories.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Well, Tommy, I appreciate you coming on and just being able to express your life and experience with us. And for the listeners, I will have all of his information in the show notes. So if you want to pick out his ear and learn more about cigars and what that looks like. And, I know he's down at the Vault, which is an amazing cigar lounge.
Oh, it is. The atmosphere there is just absolutely stellar. And with the better weather coming out, the back patio is going to be open more.
Yep.
And it's going to be absolutely fabulous.
Yes. And even if you don't, I don't smoke cigars, but it is just such a fun ambiance.
Well, they do have, they have got their liquor license. They have alcohol and mixed drinks available for their patrons. And there's a number of people I've seen come in there that do not smoke cigars,
right,
but they're going to be more than happy to sit there and enjoy a nice, mixed cocktail and just talk to people about people.
Yes. And that's how I ended up getting connected with everybody. So, listeners, I appreciate you listening on to another episode. All my information is in the show notes, and I hope you have a wonderful and blessed day. Bye, guys. And
thank you for having me. It's been
yes.
a true pleasure.
Oh.
Sometimes, whoever thought of talking about cigars, and we're hoping that more people learn about cigars. The history of cigars, there's a brand of cigars called 1502. Enrique Sanchez is the head of that corporation. The 1502 is when Columbus first came to the West and discovered cigars.
Wow.
1502. I didn't know that either.
How cool. Well, Tommy, I appreciate it again.
Again, thank you so much. And thank you for your time and inviting me over and let me tell you a little bit about my story and
all the fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's been fun. My life has truly been blessed. It's been a wild ride. My wife and I have we've been blessed. And, there's a lot of memories I'm going to have. And I hope to stick around for another 20 or 30 years and enjoy it.
Well, now you got me as a friend, so I can't
wait.
Yes,
I appreciate that so much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Good night.
Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You'd also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.